Unit 6, Text A. The EQ Factor by Nancy Gibbs. It turns out that a scientist can see the future by watching four-year-olds interact with a marshmallow. The researcher invites the children, one by one, into a plain room and begins the gentle torment. "You can have this marshmallow right now," he says. "But if you wait while I run an errand, you can have two marshmallows when I get back." And then he leaves. Some children grab for the treat the minute he's out the door. Some last a few minutes before they give in. But others are determined to wait. They cover their eyes. They put their heads down. They sing to themselves. They try to play games or even fall asleep. When the researcher returns, he gives these children their hard-earned marshmallows. And then science waits for them to grow up. By the time the children reach high school, something remarkable has happened. A survey of the children's parents and teachers found that those who, as four-year-olds, had enough self-control to hold out for the second marshmallow generally grew up to be better adjusted, more popular, adventurous, confident, and dependable teenagers. The children who gave in to temptation early on were more likely to be lonely, easily frustrated, and stubborn. They could not endure stress and shied away from challenges. And when some of the students in the two groups took the Scholastic Aptitude Test, the kids who had held out longer scored an average of 210 points higher. When we think of brilliance, we see Einstein, deep-eyed, woolly-haired, a thinking machine with skin and mismatched socks. High achievers, we imagine, were wired for greatness from birth. But then you have to wonder why, over time, natural talent seems to ignite in some people and dim in others. This is where the marshmallows come in. It seems that the ability to delay gratification is a master skill, a triumph of the reasoning brain over the impulsive one. It is a sign, in short, of emotional intelligence, and it doesn't show up on an IQ test. For most of this century, scientists have worshipped the hardware of the brain and the software of the mind. The messy powers of the heart were left to the poets. But cognitive theory could simply not explain the questions we wonder about most. Why some people just seem to have a gift for living well. Why the smartest kid in the class will probably not end up the richest. Why we like some people virtually on sight and distrust others. Why some people remain upbeat in the face of troubles that would sink a less resilient soul. What qualities of the mind or spirit, in short, determine who succeeds? The phrase emotional intelligence was coined by Yale psychologist Peter Salovey and the University of New Hampshire's John Mayer 5 years ago to describe qualities like understanding one's own feelings, empathy for the feelings of others, and the regulation of emotion in a way that enhances living. Their notion is about to bound into the national conversation, handily shortened to EQ, thanks to a new book, Emotional Intelligence by Daniel Goleman. Goleman, a Harvard psychology PhD and a New York Times science writer with a gift for making even the most difficult scientific theories digestible to lay readers, has brought together a decade's worth of behavioral research into how the mind processes feelings. His goal, he announces on the cover, is to redefine what it means to be smart. His thesis: when it comes to predicting people's success, brain power as measured by IQ and standardized achievement tests may actually matter less than the qualities of mind once thought of as character, before the word began to sound old-fashioned. At first glance, there would seem to be little that's new here to any close reader of fortune cookies. There may be no less original idea than the notion that our hearts hold dominion over our heads. I was so angry, we say, I couldn't think straight. Neither is it surprising that people skills are useful, which amounts to saying, it's good to be nice. It's so true, it's trivial, says Dr. Paul McHugh, director of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. But if it were that simple, the book would not be quite so interesting, or its implications so controversial. This is no abstract investigation. Goleman is looking for antidotes to restore civility to our streets and caring to our communal life. He sees practical applications everywhere for how companies should decide whom to hire, how couples can increase the odds that their marriages will last, how parents should raise their children, and how schools should teach them. When street gangs substitute for families, and schoolyard insults end in stabbings, when more than half of marriages end in divorce, when the majority of the children murdered in this country are killed by parents and step-parents, many of whom say they were trying to discipline the child for behavior, like blocking the TV or crying too much, it suggests a demand for remedial emotional education. And it is here the arguments will break out. Goleman's highly popularized conclusions, says McHugh, will chill any veteran scholar of psychotherapy and any neuroscientist who worries about how his research may come to be applied. While many researchers in this relatively new field are glad to see emotional issues finally taken seriously, they feel that a notion as handy as EQ invites misuse. Goleman admits the danger of suggesting that you can assign a numerical value to a person's character as well as his intellect. Goleman never even uses the phrase EQ in his book. But he did somewhat reluctantly approve an unscientific EQ test in USA Today, with choices like, I'm aware of even subtle feelings as I have them, and I can sense the pulse of a group or relationship and state unspoken feelings. You don't want to take an average of your emotional skill, argues Harvard psychology professor Jerome Kagan, a pioneer in child development research. That's what's wrong with the concept of intelligence for mental skills, too. Some people handle anger well, but can't handle fear. Some people can't take joy. So each emotion has to be viewed differently. EQ is not the opposite of IQ. Some people are blessed with a lot of both, some with little of either. What researchers have been trying to understand is how they complement each other, how one's ability to handle stress, for instance, affects the ability to concentrate and put intelligence to use. Among the ingredients for success, researchers now generally agree that IQ counts for about 20%. The rest depends on everything from class to luck to the neural pathways that have developed in the brain over millions of years of human evolution.